Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Lauren Presti. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Marvin. Good day, and thank you for calling into the Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Lauren Presti, and I am one of the care managers for the autism team at Cigna Behavioral Health. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you will be transferred to a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you'll be asked to answer questions on today's seminar. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cignabehavioral.com. On the left-hand side, click Autism Awareness, scroll to the top of the screen, and today's date, you will find today's handout. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information on your policy and what it covers, call into the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Jill Crada. Dr. Jill Crada is the Associate Chief of the Premier Healthcare Autism Research and Treatment Institute and the Manager of Clinical Services at the YAI Autism Center in New York City. Dr. Crada, you're welcome to begin.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much, Lauren and Marvin and your team at Cigna for inviting me here to speak for the second year in a row. It has really been thrilling, and I'm enjoying doing these seminars. So good afternoon, parents and professionals. I'm looking forward to speaking with you today about fostering friendships between children with autism spectrum disorders and typically developing peers. First, I would like to just apologize for any intermittent coughing and or sneezing, as I'm currently fighting a little bit of a cold here, so I do apologize in advance for that. With that being said, I do have quite a robust agenda for today with approximately 49 slides, and depending upon time, I may or may not get to all of them. However, at least you do have all of these slides to refer to. Either they're in front of you now on the computer, or as Lauren said earlier, you can access them on the Cigna website. I just want to make a note that for those of you that are looking on my PowerPoint slides right now, you are able to find each slide numbered if you click on the very top on the left-hand side of the column. It sort of looks like a page that's been folded down. If you click on that, you will be able to see the slides numbered. The numbers will appear on the bottom of each slide on the left-hand side. That might make it a little bit easier for those of you to follow along. So I will reference each slide by number. So lastly, my goals for today are first and foremost to do a very brief overview of autism and autism spectrum disorders. I understand that most of you are all experts in the field, whether you're parents living with kids on the spectrum on a day-to-day basis or professionals working in the field. But I always like to give a very brief overview on autism and autism spectrum disorders so that it can reach a wide variety of folks. We're also going to talk about friendships and why they're important and certain kinds of evidence-based interventions that we can use to help foster friendships between children with an autism spectrum disorder and their typically developing peer. Lastly, the last couple of slides, I will give you some resources that you can utilize for some parents that are more easily accessible, whether you can buy them online or at a local bookstore, and some more professional references for people who might be affiliated with a research facility where they would be able to access some of that information. So now we're going to begin. The first slide I'm going to be talking about is slide number 3. It's called Autism, a Complex Diagnosis. There is no blood test or other biological marker for autism. I think that's a really important point to keep in mind. It's not as if when a child is first born, you can test them for genetic abnormalities and determine a cause of delay, whether it might be Down syndrome or something else chromosomal. Or as a child gets older, they can take a blood test to determine as to whether or not they have diabetes. For autism, there is no biological marker at this time. The diagnosis is solely made by professional observation and parental report. I always like to reiterate this when I'm talking to families and as well as professionals so that you can realize how complex it really is to diagnose a child on the spectrum. Slide number 4, what is autism? Autism is a complex neurodevelopmental disability that causes problems in 3 areas: social interaction, communication, and behaviors. Typically, the symptoms usually start before the age of 3 and can cause delays in many different skills that develop from infancy to adulthood. So the main thing that's really important is to focus on these 3 deficits that are characteristic of folks on the spectrum: social interaction, communication, and behaviors. Slide number 4, what is an autism spectrum disorder? I think recently, within the past couple of years, we have had a lot of discussion about the word spectrum. However, a lot of people sometimes are still confused as to what that might mean. And now with some of the pending changes within the DSM, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the pending change that's coming in 2013, we will see this word spectrum used more and more frequently. So it's important to keep in mind that autism is now thought of as a spectrum disorder, or rather a group of disorders with similar features. Therefore, different people with autism can have very different symptoms. So one person may have more mild delays, while another may have more severe delays. However, they are both categorized as having an autism spectrum disorder. Our next slide, what does the ASD category include? And when I say ASD, I just want to clarify that that means autism spectrum disorder. So it includes 3 things. So think of an umbrella, which we will get to my slide that has an umbrella in a few minutes. And underneath that umbrella, there will be 3 components. One, autism, which years ago used to be called classic autism. Don't think we really kind of refer to it anymore in that respect, but I just threw it in the slide just in case some of you have seen that in the literature. Another category under the umbrella of an ASD is Asperger's disorder. And lastly, there's pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, or otherwise known as PDD-NOS. And basically what that means, it's atypical autism. So the child or the adolescent doesn't really meet the full criteria that's required in giving an autism diagnosis. So when we think of this spectrum, for example, if you could imagine a straight line in your mind, and on one side perhaps being PDD-NOS, and on the other end, all the way on the right end, Asperger's, and right in the middle would be autism. That's how I sometimes think of the spectrum. So for those of you that are more visual people, my next slide really just is a visual representation of the 3 diagnoses that are on the spectrum. So we have our ASD category and the 3 things that we had talked about that fall under the umbrella: autism, Asperger's, PDD-NOS. Now, what are the deficits associated with an autism spectrum disorder? I'm currently on slide number 6. So we had talked about the deficits before, being deficits in communication, in social skills or social interaction, and repetitive or stereotypic behaviors or routines. So let's go back to deficits in communication. And what's really important to stress here is that I'm referring to both verbal as well as nonverbal communication, right? Because there are different kinds of communication. People with autism communicate differently. Some communicate by pointing or using eye contact or gesturing to make their wants and needs known, whereas other folks are able to verbalize what they want. So it's really important to keep in mind that it could be deficits in both verbal and nonverbal communication. In terms of deficits in social skills, I'm talking about things like things being really challenging for them to share their emotions with somebody else. Instead of saying, I feel sad today, a young child who's on the spectrum might kind of have a tantrum and fall to the floor and bang his legs and arms. And that might be an indication that he's unable to verbally share how he's feeling, but we can observe by his behavior what's going on inside. Another thing that's really important I'd like to mention is understanding how others think and feel is a tremendous deficit for folks on the spectrum. And what I'm really talking about here, for some of you that are more familiar with the autism literature, is something called theory of mind, which was developed by Simon Baron Cohen and some of his colleagues out in London. And what he basically means by that is people on the spectrum having a really difficult time taking somebody else's perspective and putting yourself in their shoes. They're kind of egocentric in their thinking, and that's a real major deficit when trying to have a friendship with somebody. In addition to having deficits in being able to hold a conversation or engaging in that reciprocal interaction that goes back and forth in a flow with a conversation. And lastly, one of the last deficits that are associated with having an autism spectrum disorder are repetitive behaviors or stereotyped behaviors or routines, which would be either repeating words or actions, obsessively following routines and schedules, playing in very repetitive ways, either lining up blocks in a very high tower or constantly repeating a nursery rhyme or a favorite song. These are all deficits that are associated with autism. Moving on to our next slide, slide number 9. It says symptoms of autism spectrum disorders. These are the things we just talked about: social impairment, repetitive behaviors or interests, and communication impairment. And you can see how my circles all interlap and kind of cross over each other, providing a lot of challenges for the child on the spectrum. One other visual representation. Now here's the umbrella slide that I was talking about earlier, slide number 10, what falls under the ASD diagnoses. And what I really like about this slide, it's really specific about PDD-NOS, which is on the left-hand side, autism in the middle, and an Asperger's diagnosis. And if you read really closely the differences between these, you will see that having been diagnosed with a PDD-NOS is kind of atypical. You can see the words or in between each of those deficits, meaning they don't really meet criteria for all three. They might have one or two, but not all. For having an autism spectrum disorder, the one in the middle, you could see the words and in between those three deficits, meaning that they must have all three of those deficits in order to qualify as having an autism spectrum disorder. And lastly, with Asperger's disorder, all the way on the right-hand side, the difference between Asperger's disorder, if you can read in the middle, it says normal communication and language development, meaning that there is no reported history of that child having a language delay prior to the age of 3. So there is no cognitive impairment, and there is no impairment in language. What is impaired for a child or an adolescent or an adult with Asperger's disorder is impaired social interactions, as well as some restrictive or repetitive stereotyped behaviors. Moving on to the next slide, you can see friendships. A very cute picture of two little kitty cats with their arms around each other. So even pets can have friends too. Our next slide says, why are friendships important? And I want you to think about this in general, in terms of for typically developing children or typically developing adults, what purpose do friendships serve for them? And what it serves is that it gives you a sense of confidence. It makes you feel good to be surrounded by people, by friends. It gives you a sense of identity. It teaches you loyalty and confidence, stability. It boosts your happiness. It reduces stress. And it creates recreation and a level of excitement. And it's important for all of us to feel that in our lives, including children who are on the spectrum. Moving along to our next slide, what are the components involved in a successful social relationship? Well, things like imitation. Children often learn by imitating their peer. Hopefully it's a positive and appropriate imitation and not something negative. But they also learn to give and take and to compromise. They're able to take the perspective of somebody else, like what I was talking about before, having a theory of mind. They can also share a personal history about their families, about their siblings. They're also able to understand non-literal language and sarcasm. And what I mean by non-literal language is irony. And also, what's involved in a successful relationship and a successful social relationship is to be able to problem solve conflicts and know how to navigate and work around those social situations. What's super, super important is to remember that all of these characteristics that make up a successful social relationship are particularly complicated for individuals on the spectrum. They often miss out on a lot of this kind of information. They don't understand irony and sarcasm. They don't know how to go about solving particular conflicts with peers. And they don't always imitate their peer because they're often fixated on a different part of the interaction rather than what's going on between the two people. They may be more interested in looking at the lights up above their head rather than an interaction between another peer. The next slide, why do children with autism have difficulty making friends? Well, we did kind of touch upon this already. However, just to reiterate, kids on the spectrum often lack joint attention. And what that means is independent sharing of enjoyment with others. So, for example, if two children are playing with a little toy, a train or a doll, and they're kind of having a good time, they kind of look up at each other and gaze at each other and make eye contact and smile as if to say, this is fun. Kids with autism are not able to do that. Also, our folks on the spectrum have an inability to predict social outcomes from cues in the environment as well as from others around them, right? If I were kind of standing there with my arms folded and crossed and looking up at the sky and, you know, somebody could interpret my behavior to mean that I kind of don't really care what's going on, I'm not really interested, but somebody with autism who would be looking at me engaging in that kind of behavior would really not understand or be able to pick up on that social cue. Another reason why kids on the spectrum have a difficult time making friends is that they typically prefer to be with themselves rather than with other people. Some folks on the spectrum do have a cognitive impairment, and that can certainly interact with having a difficult time making friends. Additionally, things like theory of mind, what we talked about before, they have a difficult time understanding their peers' feelings and thoughts. They also have a hard time making eye contact and sharing that joint attention with somebody else. Once again, it's really complicated for them to read others' facial expressions and gestures and body language. And also, what's really important to remember is that typically a child with autism, their play lacks imagination, and it's more repetitive and scripted in nature, like I had talked about building a block of towers or just repeating a nursery rhyme over and over again. There's no imagination. Moving on to our next slide, slide number 15, that says other factors that can impede forming friendships for children with an autism spectrum disorder. What's important to point out is that on the previous slides that we just talked about, those are more of the overt or observable characteristics of autism that complicate forming friendship. On this particular slide, we see more of the covert or underlying characteristics that make friendship forming really complex. For example, anxiety. There is a lot of social anxiety that goes on inside a child with autism. In addition to social isolation, poor peer interaction, or perhaps their feelings of being rejected from peers. And certainly there's an aspect of depression. So as a result of all of these overt and covert factors, children with an autism spectrum disorder really struggle to develop and maintain friendships. So our next slide is a lovely little picture of a little boy on the spectrum who once again is engaged in that really stereotypic or repetitive pattern of play by building blocks all the way straight up in the sky. And this slide is really just to remind you some of the complexities that are involved when thinking about developing play skills for your child with autism. So the next couple of slides, I'm currently up to slide number 17 that says within autism. The next couple of slides I'm going to go through really quickly. It's really just a review of how fostering friendships for kids with an autism spectrum disorder can be very challenging. So once again, within folks with autism, individuals often miss out on the incidental learning opportunities to teach social skills, right? They don't really follow imitation. They're not going to see how another child runs over to another child and throws a ball to them. They're not going to pick up on those incidental learning opportunities. We already know they have difficulty interpreting subtle social cues and even overt social cues. We know that social interactions and social rules are constantly changing in their environment, and a lot of those transitions are really difficult and complex for the child on the spectrum to kind of organize. The next slide talks about communication skills. So we are already aware of some of the challenges there. The conversational abilities are not really present in a child with autism. They have a complicated time taking somebody else's perspective. They have a difficult time with irony and sarcasm. And also, kids on the spectrum are very literal thinkers. So, for an example, the old phrase is, oh, I'm sorry, Jane, I can't continue our conversation. I have to go run and catch a bus. Well, for the typically developing person, we know what that person is trying to say to Jane. We know that she has to cut the conversation short because she's on a schedule and she has to make a bus to take her back home. But a child with autism hears that phrase and will literally think, and outstretch his or her arms to catch a bus that might be falling from the sky. So these are things to keep in mind when trying to interact and form a relationship between a peer with a disability and a peer without. Our next slide, once again, talks about some of those nonverbal skills that are challenging. We talk about something called proxemics, which is the awareness of your body and space. Sometimes kids with autism will get very close to their peer, and their peer might back off a little bit because it's kind of infringing on their personal space. Once again, we also know about gestures and body language and facial cues, which are all really difficult and complicated for somebody on the spectrum to interpret. And, of course, we also know about their social and interpersonal skills. The interaction styles are different, their social appropriateness. They're not always so flexible in their play. And lastly, individuals with an autism spectrum disorder have restricted interests and repetitive behaviors. Sometimes they have odd or repetitive body movements, whether it be rocking or slapping or jumping. They might have odd hand mannerisms, hand flicking, finger flicking. They might perseverate on certain topics of interest. I once worked with a little boy who would constantly talk about the three little pigs, and he would say, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow the house down. I would say, hello, John, how are you? And he would say, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow the house down. So that's kind of some echolalia, whether it's delayed echolalia or immediate echolalia, that does kind of infringe upon the interaction of forming friends. I'm up to slide number 22. It says, what is a basic aim when integrating peers? The number one thing is that it must be fun. And you need to practice and coach your child who is on the spectrum. and by providing them with a lot of support and helping them move from no meaningful social interaction to some meaningful social interaction is a huge step. Slide number 23, we're finally getting to the nuts and bolts of the presentation with my limited amount of time. So now we're going to talk about these interventions to help children with an autism spectrum disorder foster friendships with their typically developing peer. And these are some of the things we're going to talk about briefly. Social skills groups, social scripts, push-in services, peer group entry, buddy time, games, incidental teaching, peer support network, video modeling, and circle of friends. I'm sure some of you are familiar with some of these. Some of you might not be so familiar. Keep in mind what I'm going to be talking about is just a snapshot for you. I encourage all of you to go and do your own research and come up with a plan of what you think would work best since you know your child best. Moving on to slide number 24, social skills groups. I think probably most of us are mostly familiar with social skills groups. There are, of course, commercial curricula that you can use. I mentioned the ones by McAfee and Goldstein and McGinnis, either Navigating the Social World or one that's more appropriate for some adolescents. Or for sure, there's lots of clinical people out there, psychologists and clinical social workers, who develop their own curriculas and have had very positive experience. But the main focus is particularly to provide consistent group structure, to check in, to greet with the person, review the skill that was discussed the week before, introduce a new skill, constantly modeling and role-playing the new skill between the peer with an autism spectrum disorder as well as the typically developing child, engage in some sort of snack or social time, have an activity that really allows the practice of the skill. And typically these groups are most effective when you're targeting a social cognitive skill. And there is also some research that when it's done in school settings, it's very they have very positive outcomes for kids on the spectrum. However, I've also seen it been done in recreational settings with a lot of positive results as well. So the next two slides, slide number 25 and 26, really just talks about some of the research that supports the use of social skills as an effective evidence-based intervention to improve positive outcomes for folks on the spectrum. I'm not going to go into them in its entirety. However, there are things like when the teacher redirects the child, when there's a lot of prompting the children to play with one another, or praising children for playing together and providing some direct instruction and modeling and role-playing is really when they see the most positive results. The next slide that talks about a meta-analysis of social skills intervention, and a meta-analysis is just a fancy, schmancy research word to talk about how a whole bunch of social skill interventions were studied and reviewed. And what it really just talks about is that it's most effective when you directly match between what the child needs are, whatever particular skill they need to learn, and whatever skill is being taught within that social skills group, you would find the most positive outcome. And also, once again, there's a lot of research to support how it's most positive in the classroom setting. The next intervention, slide number 27, we're going to talk about scripts, or some people call them social scripts. And basically what that means is exactly what it sounds like. It's a script for a social situation. So it provides pre-taught language for a specific situation, which includes conversation starters, responses, and different ideas on how to connect the conversation between the two kids, the kid with an autism spectrum disorder and the typically developing peer, will help them, give them ideas on how to change the topic of conversation. A social script can also help reduce the stress that's associated with a social interaction. Remember, we had talked about some of the covert issues that might inhibit a child with an autism spectrum disorder to approach a peer. has a lot to do with anxiety. So this is super important when working with a kid with autism, is to provide them with that social script and letting them know what to do. And lastly, it can also assist the student with understanding the perspective of others. I keep kind of reiterating that point, that theory of mind, because it's so important to really help that individual get inside somebody else's head and pick up on some of their feelings. The next slide, slide number 26, pretty much just gives you an example of what I'm talking about when I'm saying a social script. So you are literally providing the explicit written script of the interaction. It can be visual for those folks that are more visual learners by using pictures, or if somebody is able to read and really enjoys reading, you can use it in a more written format. So you would tell that child really to walk up to a classmate, make eye contact, say, "Hi, Jimmy, would you like to go play checkers?" A literal script. And like I said, it can be visual or written depending upon how the child learns best. You can practice it with a clinician, with a parent, with a sibling, with a teacher, of course, with a peer. And eventually, over time, the ultimate goal is to fade the script out so that you cut off increasingly larger parts of the script until the child who has an autism spectrum disorder can do the scene independently. Once again, it takes baby steps. It's not going to happen overnight, but you will see changes. The next slide does continue to talk about scripting with peer training by McClanahan and Kramps in 2005. This is just to show you that a lot of this stuff has been research-based and has really good results for working with kids on the spectrum. And what this does is that it teaches the typically developing peer first and then have them teach it to the child with an autism spectrum disorder. So the peer teaches these five facilitative skills without the target child present. And when I say target child, I mean the child with an autism spectrum disorder. So they literally provide them with a script. Look, wait, listen, answer questions, start talking. Once again, it can be written for a social interaction. Can I play checkers with you? It can be for doing a community outing or a certain kind of activity for daily living skill as well. Our next slide, we're going to talk about some push-in services very briefly, slide number 30. And this is where the staff person, whether they're in your school or community setting, literally comes into the classroom and directs the behavior. So it's either teacher or maybe a related service professional, a speech and language pathologist, an occupational therapist, would really redirect the behavior. And they'd prompt the child to play with one another. They would praise the children for playing together. They would provide direct instruction with social language, modeling and practice and role playing over and over again. These things have been very effective in a school setting as well. Our next technique and our next slide, slide number 31, is something called peer group entry. And this is where a typical peer is assigned to be a leader. And that lead child will establish his membership in the group that he is the leader, and he's prompted to initiate interactions. And he's given some sort of highly valued object or a game or a prop or a toy. And then the target child is taught a five-step visual sequence for entering in the group. We will discuss that five-step sequence in the next slide. So I want just to point out that there are so many benefits as well for the typically developing child to engage with a peer who has an autism spectrum disorder. It provides them with empowerment and confidence and a real sense of accomplishment that they're helping their fellow peer. And I think it really does go both ways, and that's super important to point out. So once again, following through with peer group entry on our next slide, this is the five-step visual sequence that I was talking about. You would walk over to your friend, so now the typically developing child is telling this to the child on the spectrum. You'll walk over to your friend, you'll watch your friend, you'll get a similar toy like your friend. Here we're trying to do some sort of imitation that is so difficult for kids on the spectrum. We will instruct the child to do the same thing as your friend and then tell an idea, start a conversation. How do you feel? How do you like the toy? Would you like something else? And what I've seen by this being demonstrated is that it really does encourage reciprocal interactions, a reciprocal social interaction between the peers. It helps enhance their verbal communication. And even more importantly, it helps develop pragmatic language skills. And what I mean by that is more of the social conversational aspects of language. This has been a really excellent technique in helping kids on the spectrum develop that. Our next slide we move to, slide number 33, is called Buddy Time. Also an established technique back in 1996, and it's something that seems so simple, but with the right support, all of these things really can help, whether it's in the school setting or you want to generalize it to the home or the playground or the community. This is where you just take 20 minutes, either a period in school, it doesn't have to be 20 minutes, maybe 15, during the school day, and a child is assigned a buddy. And the buddies can rotate so that each child is getting more comfortable and familiar with different kids that they're surrounded by. And they teach them things, stay, play, and talk. Say your name, talk about whatever play you're engaging in, showing them how to respond. It's typical peer modeling with giving the typically developing child a little bit more instruction and leadership in how to guide the person with an autism spectrum disorder. Our next slide, slide number 34, are basic games that are based on special interests. So using social games based on the interests of your child can really help develop these social outcomes. It can also be used to help decrease anxiety, which is a huge issue for children on the spectrum, as we've already talked about. Games are also used for times during transition. You can play a game with a child, with their typically developing peer, for 10 minutes prior to them transitioning to another activity. You can have the child do this with a sibling, a typically developing sibling, a peer, a relative. What's really important is teaching them how to take turns. This helps them establish social rules and being interactive. And it really helps the child develop a friendship naturally. They're having fun. They're playing a game. They're engaging in this social interaction. Some of the games on the pictures here might be too complicated for some of our folks, but there certainly are a lot of games out there that are really appropriate for kids on the spectrum, depending upon, once again, what kind of learner they are. The next slide talks about incidental teaching. And this is literally where interactions are engineered and materials are controlled so that the target child must interact to obtain the needed object and complete the activity. So it's engineered where, for example, a typical child is assigned to complete a puzzle and he holds all the puzzle pieces and is told to hold them until the other child comes and must complete the task. So perhaps there's one puzzle piece missing and the child with an autism spectrum disorder will come over. And that creates a really nice opportunity for the two children to develop a relationship, to give positive praise to each other, just by these little incidental teaching techniques. You would really be surprised how well that works. Our next slide is called Peer Support Networks, kind of similar to what we've talked about already, where you select 2 to 5 peers to serve as social support for students with an autism spectrum disorder, and you take 20, 10, 15 minutes out of the day to structure the activities for the child with an autism spectrum disorder, either during lunch or recess, prompting them, praising them, for engaging with the other children at the table, or a teacher or clinician can create a social script for entering a game. The only difference between the peer support network and incidental teaching is that incidental teaching is typically more one-on-one, and peer support is usually more in a group, small group setting, but in a group. What I like about this one also is that it's really helpful that you can generalize these skills to other places. So if they're in the lunchroom at school, then perhaps it can be carried out with these peers onto the playground or then at home. Moving along to our next slide, slide number 37. We're almost there, folks. Have a couple of more minutes before we open up the floor for some questions, is about video modeling and something else called video self-modeling. And this is a video representation of a desired behavioral interaction. It could be a behavior. It could be an activity for daily living. It could be a community outing. This is where the child observes a video of a peer, a similar peer, or of him or herself engaging in a targeted behavior. And the basic premise of this is to learn through observation. Remember, we keep talking about imitation and how difficult it is for a child with autism to do that. So by them focusing on a visual representation of either themselves performing a skill, whether it's interacting with a child in the community or helping them to brush their teeth, there's a lot of research that shows that the child with an autism spectrum disorder responds really, really well, perhaps even better, to that visual model as opposed to that one-on-one with another child. Once again, it depends upon the child that you're working with. But these things you can use for either purchasing items at a store, even greeting somebody, saying hello, saying goodbye. As I said, an activity for daily living skills like washing hands. It actually is a very, very useful, and there's a lot of research to support its effectiveness. One last thing I want to mention about video modeling is that it's super important to watch the video representation after you do the skill. Discuss what's going on with a parent, with a teacher, with a clinician. Verbally be very explicit and expressive to the child with autism, providing them with a lot of praise. I loved how you greeted Johnny on that video, James. That's excellent behavior. Excellent work. I'm so proud of you. Let's see if we can do that now in the community. It's super important to really discuss that video and reenact the scene. Moving on to one of our last techniques, it's called Circle of Friends. Now, these are programs that are in some schools that are all over the country, actually. They do have a website, as I list here on the bottom of my slide, www.circleoffriends.org. And it's a wonderful program which promotes inclusion of students with special needs into the school community. It's peer-based and engages peers and groups in practicing social skills, where a circle is formed by peers and classmates, and a student with ASD is the focus child and is in the middle of the circle. We'll get to that in 1 minute about the focus child. But I do want to say on our next slide that there's a ton of research that supports the use of Circle of Friends. For example, the research has shown an improvement in empathy, in problem solving, in communication and emotional expression, and awareness of individual ability for the child with autism. And additional improvements have been noticed in the area of social interaction, peer interaction, and has even decreased anxiety. What could be better than that, right, for some of our folks? And one of our last slides, the next one, slide number 41, talks about the benefits of the focus child. So even though that child is in the middle of the circle, they gain more attention from members of the friendship network. It increases acceptance from the group. It increases self-esteem, and it decreases their loneliness and isolation, as well as anxiety and stress. I know I've gone over this really briefly, but there is a ton of literature out there about some of these techniques. And once again, I urge you to go out there and do some research. Our last slide, just want to make a point that it's important to remember that the experience of a successful and enjoyable friendship will become a motivating force for your child to pursue better social contact, to make play and friendships a more positive experience. My next slide, slide number 43, I have some published resources for parents, things that even can have a social skills picture book that you can discuss with your child about the various pictures. They're easily accessible either online or in a local bookstore. They're all really well-known authors. The next two slides are more references for professionals. Like I had mentioned earlier, if anybody is connected to a university library or have access to some journals, you can look up some of these things that I had talked about in my presentation for the next two slides of professional resources. My next slide, number 46, gives you some online resources. It points you in the direction of the Department of Education, the Council for Exceptional Children, or otherwise known as the CEC. Autism Speaks as well. And one of my favorite websites is called the Professional Development Center on Autism Spectrum Disorders, which is actually a collaboration between three major research universities that have autism centers. One is the University of Chapel Hill in North Carolina. One is the MIND, M-I-N-D, Institute in California. And lastly, the University of Wisconsin. It's an excellent resource of information for parents as well as professionals. My next slide, I would be remiss if I didn't thank my colleague, Maura Lewis, who is a speech and language pathologist, for helping me to collaborate on these slides. So, Maura, thank you very much if you're out there and listening. And I'm happy to take any questions. I'd like to first turn this presentation back over to Lauren and Marvin for a very brief five-question survey, and then I'm happy to stay on the line for anyone that might have any questions or comments. So thank you so much for having me once again. Hello?
And at this time, we will evaluate and improve our program. Please complete the following survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question number one. This session provided me with information on fostering friendships for individuals with autism. Press 1 if you strongly agree, 2 if you agree, 3 if you disagree, or 4 if you strongly disagree. Okay, we'll move on to question number 2. This session educated me on how to create social opportunities for a child diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. And question number 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. Move on to question number 4. I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree or star 2 if you disagree. And finally, question number 5. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star 1 if you are the parent of a child with autism. Press star 2 if you have a child or member of the family with autism, and press star 3 if you have an other situation. And thank you for your participation and feedback in this program. If you'd like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, please press star 1 to have your line opened into the conference at this time. And once again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we do have a question from the phone. Caller, your line is now open.
I was wondering, when picking a behavioral therapist or a specialist to work with your child who has autism, what characteristics should you look for so you know you have a good provider?
Yes, hi. This is Jill Creda. Thank you so much for your question. I think that's an excellent question. And I think every state has some different requirements. However, what I would recommend first and foremost is somebody who is what we call a BCBA. That stands for Board Certified Behavior Analyst. And typically, there's somebody that went through this kind of a training program who is specifically trained to work with your child who is on the spectrum, who has a really strong background in applied behavior analysis, as well as an advanced degree. And they do also have to meet a certain amount of hours of requirement in order to get that certification. Once again, every state, I don't know what state you're calling from, but every state most likely has a different requirement. But in terms of the educational background, I would pick somebody who has that BCBA qualification. In terms of their personality, I would think that you would have to really interview people to see who would be a good match for your child, as you know your child best and how he or she would interact with a person. I think you could use your best judgment and your instinct as to who would be a perfect match for that child.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking.
And once again, that's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll go to our next question. Caller, your line is now open.
Hi. My son was diagnosed when he was 2, and he's now 9. And he was actually diagnosed with the PDD-NOS.
Okay.
My question is, he's no longer getting services at school because he is so high functioning that they don't feel he needs to work on anything. We do continue to see some behaviors at home, and I'm just wondering if we should try to continue to work on those at home or just let him be. And the examples I have for that is stimming is one of them, and the other is lining things up and then not playing with it after that. He only does it at home when he's having, his downtime. After
right.
He's at school, he'll come home and he wants to play alone for, an hour, and then he'll want to call a friend. So
yeah.
Is it okay to let him do that?
Yeah, to be honest with you, your question is not unusual. I don't know if that helps you in any way, but I have had a lot of parents ask me similar questions. And it's also not unusual that I do hear that although kids do carry a diagnosis of whether it's PDD or autism or somewhere on the spectrum, that the school is not supporting them in services because they are so high functioning, whether it be cognitively. However, they're not really addressing some of these social behaviors that might be very isolating for them when it comes time to engage and interact with peers. What I would do, I don't know your child. You, of course, know him best. But what I would do is that I would probably give him a little bit of downtime at home first. Let him stim. Let him do what he does, lining up his toys, and then or whatever it might be that he's interested in lining up. However, I would make it very time-limited and be very verbal and let him know that you're going to have some private time on your own to do what you want, whatever that might be, and then later on try to engage him in something else and incorporate some of these techniques to kind of bring him out of that. The stimming and the lining up toys, as you know best, is one of these characteristics of autism. And it might not ever go away, but we can certainly help diminish and diminish the anxiety that might be around that by engaging him in other activities. So I would let him stim and line up toys, but let him know it would be time limited, and then you could move on to another activity.
Okay, because he does, you know, I did tell him he can have downtime after school because I know he has to hold it together all day. And he does call it his downtime, and he does play alone.
Of course.
And no one can be in the room with him. You know, he's very...
Of course. Look, we're not trying
to... It's about an hour or less. And then we go to baseball or whatever activity we have. So.
Sure. No, I understand that completely. Look, we're not trying to eradicate any of these things that are so characteristic of autism. This is who your son is. So we're just trying to help figure out a way to give him the best quality of life to be happy and productive while being able to do what's enjoying to him, what's self-stimulating to him, but then realizing that there is a community out there and he can be connected in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was okay for me to let him have that downtime. Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And once again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question at this time. Okay, we do have a question from the phone. Caller, your line is now open.
Now, with when you have a son who has autism and then the younger son is starting to pick up the characteristics and mimic his brother, I'm assuming you just kind of use the same techniques that you would use for the older brother who does have autism to kind of correct the younger one's mimicking of what his brother's doing.
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question, and like I said to the previous caller, it is not uncommon for me to hear a question like that. First of all, your younger son is looking up to his big brother, right? You know, all younger siblings typically look up to their older sibling. They're proud of them. However, all of a sudden, the mimicking kind of behaviors come. And I do agree with you. I would just kind of reiterate and prompt your child to do something else. Maybe, I don't know how old the younger son is. Maybe he's not able to understand some of your older son's special needs or issues. But as he's older and able to understand, I would kind of explain it to him and maybe use your younger son eventually to be a role model in terms of behaviors and peer interactions for your older son as well.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. At this time, we have no other questions. Oh, it looks like we just got a question. Caller, your line is now open.
Hi. I already asked the question. I just have one more quick question. I'm sorry. Back to the 9-year-old again. I just was wondering, is it okay that we have not told him he has autism?
Well, thank you for your question again and staying on the line and calling back. I do appreciate that. You know, I really don't know your family situation, and I don't know your son, and I really think that that's a discussion that you and your husband or your partner or your caregivers should really have as a family and make that decision. It wouldn't be fair or it would be judgmental of me to make a comment on that. I really think that's up to the family and what you choose to say to your son.
Okay, because I guess the reason for it is we don't want him to feel different. He has very low-functioning autism kids in his classroom, and he's very sympathetic to them. But if we told him that he had autism, we're worried that he's going to feel like he's the same as them and maybe lose some self-confidence that way.
I understand that. I mean, that's a really well-taken point. But your son is 9 right now, and mm-hmm. since he is, you know, on the autism spectrum and you say on the lower-functioning side, there's a whole level of arrested development for him. So even though chronologically he's 9, maybe developmentally he's a little bit younger and he's not willing to hear that.
Yeah, he's on the high-functioning side.
Oh, he's on the high-functioning side. You know, you have to...
He's not services anymore, right?
Right, okay, so you have to give him a little bit more time, and maybe there will come a time when he's an adolescent or that he would be ready to hear that information. I'm happy to hear that he's so empathic and sensitive to his classmates and peers. I think that's really, really wonderful. But in terms of whether or not you should tell him that he's on the spectrum, it's purely a decision that you and your family can make together.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. We'll go to our next question. Caller, your line is now open.
Hi. I have a 3-year-old with autism, and I wanted to know, how do I help him transition? Like, let's say he has a birthday party, and he goes and he wants to stay forever, and the party's over. He's resistant to leave, and then when we eventually do get him to leave, he talks about the birthday party for weeks. He's like, stays in his mind, I want to go to so-and-so's birthday party. I want to go to so-and-so's birthday party. And we keep going along with him sometimes. Sometimes we try to explain. Sometimes he stops. But it's hard for him to transition out of these parties and get it out of his mind for a while.
Yeah, thank you for your question. Absolutely. This is a complex issue, especially for the little guys, you know, on the spectrum, a 3-year-old. Transition is a huge area where kids feel really anxious, you know, especially kids on the spectrum. They like to have their routine and, you know, leaving an activity that's so enjoyable for any child, let alone having a child on the spectrum, is really difficult. And then I hear what you're saying about the repetitive pattern of speech and talking about the party for weeks to come. One thing that I would do, I'm just giving you an example, whatever activity he's engaged in, and perhaps you already do this with your son, but I would give him maybe 15 minutes prior to you leaving the party or an activity. Give him kind of like a heads up that you're going to leave. If you need to make something visual for him, maybe sometimes the verbal language for a 3-year-old might be somewhat complex. Maybe getting a picture book and taking pictures of your son doing this enjoyable activity, whether it's at a party or a playground, and put it kind of like in a photo album, and 15 minutes before, kind of show him the book that he'll be getting on his coat or his shoes and grabbing his backpack and getting ready to leave. I would take photographs of him before the activities, during and after, and kind of go through the book with him 15 minutes prior to leaving, 10 minutes prior to leaving, even 5 minutes prior, being very repetitive and very, very positive in your approach and praising everything that you see in the picture book. But sometimes using pictures, a visual representation for a 3-year-old, coupled with the verbal praise, could be really helpful. Have you tried something like that or would be interested in trying that?
Well, I need to, because I know that that's an issue with him, because over the weekend when he's not at school and it's not structured, he makes his own structure. Like, whatever we did the prior week, he talks about it. Like, he loves structure, and I need to do this picture book. And I purchased a calendar, you know, a nice little calendar, kitty calendar, to show him everything that he'll be doing, because he needs that. So I didn't have to try your idea, but I've thought of it, but it's getting it together. But this weekend we have a party, and I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I would recommend that. The calendar is excellent. Provide the structure similar to what he's going through at school, at home. And, you know, he's a little one. He's 3. Things might change as he gets older, but I would really try the visual pictures and see how that goes.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, we have no other questions from the phones.
Okay, well, thank everybody so much for attending, and thank you, Dr. Kreda, for your insights today. Again, if you have specific questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please make sure to mark your calendars to join us for our next autism awareness seminar. It will be next month, July 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when we will be discussing how anxiety affects the lives of individuals with autism. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
This will conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.